You are now listening to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast with Dr. Taylor Crick. Dr. Taylor is an expert in helping those suffering with autoimmune disease, and he himself has autoimmune disease. Autoimmunity is rampant today, and the purpose of this podcast is to educate about the underlying causes and natural solutions to halt autoimmune disease progression. This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. For more information from Dr. Taylor, visit www.autoimmunedocpodcast.com. Without further ado, here is your host, Dr. Taylor Crick.
All right, what's up? It's Dr. Taylor. Welcome to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast. Today, I'm bringing you another interview. And today's a first in a series of other interviews I want to start doing. And part of the reason, too, is just to get good content out there. You know, I'm busy, as I've mentioned before on the podcast, but I also sometimes run out of things to talk about, of just like hot topics or topics of conversation. So today I'm joined by Dr. Mark Sue, MD. And so Dr. Sue's got a pretty broad ranging areas of expertise, I would say. And I would say similar to mine, I consider myself an expert in a lot of the areas that you are an expert in, Dr. Sue. But I also said in an email, I said, yours is probably greater than mine. So I like learning from people who are smarter than me, of course. But all the things, toxicity, infections, chronic underlying infections, stress, gut health, foods, etc. So Dr. Mark, welcome to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast. How are you today?
Hey, it's my pleasure. Yeah, I'm flattered. I don't look at it as like, you know, who's an expert or next this or that, or it's definitely not a comparison. We're all, you know, we're working all together. So it's,
yeah,
cool.
And I don't either, but I'm just saying, like, you're a sharp guy is my point. And so it's, you know, and that's kind of how I found out about you too. You know, I was going to mention and just how I heard your name, because, you know, a lot of people get out there and they try to make a podcast or they try to make themselves famous. I think that your name has just popped up in different forums and message boards. Like, the first time I remember seeing your name was at TFIM. And honestly, at TFIM, my first impression of TFIM was like, wow, all these MDs are like kind of speaking our language. Because, you know, in the chiropractor naturopath world, sometimes not all MDs really speak the same language as far as natural medicine, alternative medicine. I mean, obviously, we're all familiar with conventional medicine, but you are a traditionally trained MD that has, you know, knowledge with prescriptions and pharmacology, but also knowledge with some of these other modalities and supplements and muscle testing and other things. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about how you got more into the natural alternative side of things. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your practice, your background, and kind of, I'm guessing that this didn't happen from the get-go, from day one of medical school. There's got to be some story of evolution, I would imagine. So tell us about that, if you will.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I think a lot of it is just calling that, you know, whether you want to call it universe or higher power. Or for me, I have a faith background. So, you know, I just think it's like a God-directed calling in my life. I don't come from a background where I've dealt with chronic, you know, illness and chronic complex illness myself. I'm not saying I don't have bits and parts of it, but I don't have that, you know, suffering background that I used to address
pain to pleasure or whatever. You know, you don't have that story. Neither do I.
Or my family members. You know, I find a lot of our colleagues do, but I'm not one of those people. So, you know, I've come to recognize that, you know, the wiring that I have of empathy is just kind of, I don't know, people tell me it's just very unusual and it's that. But I think ultimately, I think the driver is just, I think you and I are similarly, right? I mean, I think I'm just super curious and constantly asking questions, and I sort of have an insatiable curiosity. So, you know, some interesting fun factoids in the background. You know, so you're in Illinois, I'm originally from Indianapolis. The reason we were in Indianapolis is because my dad was a drug researcher at Eli Lilly. And one of his better friends who lived in our neighborhood is like a co-inventor of Prozac.
My uncle worked for Lilly in Indianapolis for years. They now live in Philadelphia, but yeah.
Yeah. So that's why we were there. And I don't know, medical school, I didn't even go into college like thinking about assuming anything about medical school. But anyway, you know, I have a really big emphasis on fairness and equality, and you know, that's a kind of an impossible carrot to chase. But But, you know, I went to medical school, like, thinking my whole goal is, like, to, it really is, as trite as it sounds, it's just to help people and have long-term longitudinal relationships, you know, to be there and be privileged to be in that journey. So I never really had interest in these particular science. I could have been a better student, quite honestly. I definitely didn't have interest in certain specialties because it wasn't about the specialties and it wasn't about the topics of medicine. It was about the people. But somewhere, you know, in my first 3 years of practice from 2003 to 2006, I had patients who here in North Shore, Massachusetts, who told me, like, I have fibromyalgia. And when I get sick with a head cold or whatever, I know you're going to tell me I don't need antibiotics, you know, Mark, but these aches and pains I get from my fibromyalgia get better when I'm on antibiotics. And I'm thinking, like, they're not scamming me for antibiotics. All right. Like, they have no ulterior motive here. What's that about? Right. That was my first real concrete recurring experience. And then they would, you know, some people would say, like, yeah, I have chronic Lyme. And I'm like, what does that mean? You know, so Lyme really was. And I think for a lot of people, it's like, you know, it's a forerunner, the frontier that really opened my eyes. Like, what's going on that's behind what I've learned, you know?
Right.
And then 2006, I started with another practice. It was called Holistic Family Practice, you know? So, and I kind of did that, I think, more than I realized, intentionally, to kind of challenge myself, because those patients were sort of self, it was insurance-based and all that stuff, conventional medicine, but it was, you know, self-selected population. They had interests outside of conventional medicine. And so anyway, that was the journey. And then a nurse practitioner there, who is in our practice now, that office has closed since years ago, but she introduced me to ILADS and chronic Lyme through illness within her family. That you know, so it really just that's what kind of started that door for me.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, Lyme, and you're in a Lyme endemic area, and it's an interesting gateway. But I think that my story is, you know, completely different but really similar. Of, like, you know, especially being in a chiropractic clinic, like, I don't know, 7 out of 10 people get great results, but it's like the 3 that don't. It'd be like fibromyalgia or people with these chronic and complex. And then you start learning about Lyme and co-infections. You start learning about mold. You start learning about heavy metals. And you start learning about how to differentiate and how they mimic each other. And it just leads you down a rabbit hole. And it's, for me, it's a never-ending rabbit hole of, like, learning. So that's why I love it, is there is no end. There is no final destination. It's just like there's always new journals to read and things like that. So that's pretty interesting, just even getting it in. What about since then? You know, what about after that clinic closed? What about where you're at now with some of your clinic? And tell me about your patient base now, because you still work with chronic and complex illnesses. You still work with Lyme and co-infections. You're also president, I believe, of ICI. Tell me about some of your other maybe involvements with IADS or otherwise.
Yeah, after working in a couple offices then, right, for a total of about 11 and a half years in 2014, I had a life crisis. And, you know, as a person who just always wanted to keep low risk and just keep stress low, I somehow, for whatever reason, again, I don't take credit for it. It's just, I was like, yeah, screw it, man. It's a one-time thing, right? So I went out on a limb and decided to start this practice in 2014. And it's what we call low-cost concierge practice. We take insurance, but you know, then we have, like, non-insurance covered amenities. And so people pay, like, an average about $70 a month for these non-insurance covered amenities. And so we actually cross between, you know, conventional medicine and functional medicine or root cause medicine on multiple levels, pragmatically and in clinical content. We don't really, like, use the terms functional medicine, whatever. It's just, we just think about, like, well, do you want to try to figure out why you're dealing with what you're dealing with?
And, sure.
And, you know, a few people are like, yeah, no, I want to keep it simple right now. I'm not that bad. So, I don't really want to spend the time or money, whatever. Okay, fine. But we still do primary care. Right. And so, you know, we are low cost concierge practice. Patients have my, all my patients have my cell phone and email and stuff. So yeah, it's like that. But, you know, it's great. Our visits are, like, scheduled as, like, you know, almost most of the far majority of them are scheduled like an hour piece, which is very unusual for, you know, a practice that takes insurance. And, it's very uncommon that we have patients who are, you know, that well, because a lot of the chronic illness patients, like, kind of figured out, you know, who we are by our website and stuff. So yeah, we do consulting, we do primary care. And then, so 2014, we started this practice. We started using, at the time, Igenex. You know, we still use Igenex, but we started using Igenex full out, whereas at the previous office, we were sort of limited as to what we could do. We were only using the urine spot test. But wow, it was like eyes open. It's like, oh my God, do this many people really have Lyme? or, you know, tick-borne infection. And then in 18-ish, you know, went to TFIM conference that you and I, you know, both attended many years. And that's when my eyes were opened to the whole SIRS protocol, Richard Shoemaker, mold toxins. And so we started testing people for that. And I was like, oh my gosh, like eyes wide open, right? And then 2000, and then COVID hit, of course. And so that was like a big provocateur for me to better understand immune system topics. And so that was really meaningful. And then subsequent to that, it was like, okay, now that I've sort of, we go to these conferences, we read stuff all over the place, and it's just, there's so much, as you just said. And, you know, for me anyway, I'm guessing you felt the same at times. I come out of a weekend conference, I'm like, oh my God, like, what do I do with all that info, right? Six people out of the 20 some presenters all basically inferred, like, this is the big topic that all your chronic illness patients have that you haven't tested for or dealt with in more meaningful emphasis, and you need to go start doing that on Monday. But like, that's not true, obviously. Not everybody's got your thing out of those six or 20 or whatever topics.
Especially if that's their niche that they speak on. Then,
yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, there's no judgment there. I'm just saying, like, you're all saying the same thing about your topic and they're not the same topic. So what do I do with all this? How do I assimilate it all? Right. So that's where it kind of, a lot of it through the a paper I just happened to come across on the topic of inflammaging. I took this three-part model and then kind of extrapolated it and sort of came up with this model for myself to better organize information for myself, and then started using it in it's like evaluating patients. And it was just magical for me. It was really magical. And then subsequent to that, I was like, there's a big hole in this map for me. And that's the topic of parasites. So that's when I went back to, I looked up CellCore because Todd Watts, you know, had given a talk at a TFIM conference, I think it was in 2019. And I just remember really, you know, really liking his integrity, his presence. And you know, we've become friends. He's a great, great guy. I just really, really love that guy. So I ventured into the CellCore world as a supplement company, but just learning about parasites. And that was the next big game changer. So for me, it was like, 2014, Lyme, eyes wide open. 2018-ish, you know, mold toxins, like eyes wide open. And then 2019, I think it was like parasites, major eyes wide open. At this point, it's, you know, not so much about, for us, it's not so much about like this niche topic or that niche topic or even the combo of those two niche topics. It's like, how do you sequence all this info together in this sort of like raw, crude AI kind of format?
Yeah. And I think that if I could piggyback off some of the things that you said, like, you know, one of the things that I've been drawn to about CellCore is their whole big picture concept is a little bit like, you know, obviously there's customization and unique things, but it's like everybody's got this chronic infectious burden. Everybody's got these toxin burdens. Everybody's got these burdens. And sometimes with testing, sometimes people spend all their money trying to figure out what is the toxin or what is the infection. And CellCore is a little bit like, who cares? Let's start chipping away at them and cleaning them all. And I think that fits in well with your three-part model of, you know, exosome and interfaces and self, because to a certain degree, and this is for me too, and I'd like your opinion on this, but for me, even with Lyme and Igenics and Sears testing, I've always been cash-based. So I've always steered away from a lot of those labs because they're exorbitantly expensive. So I've always thought, how can I find these answers? How can I find these clues? How can I lead people down this right treatment path without testing a full Sears panel that's going to cost them $2,500 out of pocket or a Igenics test? So I think that some of those big pictures of like you zoom out on some of those pathogens. Now, it's still important to know what the pathogen is you're going after. It's still important to know what the toxin is that might be causing it. But there's some of these big picture concepts. So CellCore has been, you know, certainly a helpful piece of my practice. Now, I don't follow their exact protocols like some people do, but I use all of their products and I use all their binders and carboxy and full moon cleanses. And I think we'll probably come back to that because I've got some questions about how that's changed your practice and things. But why don't you talk about, if you will, this three-part framework that you've developed? Because that's another thing that, you know, so I mentioned before that your name first popped on my radar from just seeing you chime in on forums and just like, you know, the things you were chiming in were sharp and were, you know, you could tell you cared about the patients, but you also understood the science behind it and the mechanisms, and they weren't, you know, just cookie cutter answers and things like that. But on the Great Plains Forum, which is a practitioner forum, now the Mosaic Forum that you and I are both members of, you chime in a lot. And you also often, you know, you make me laugh because you apologize sometimes for how long your emails are, but they're often extensive. I'm like, man, this guy's got some time to write his email replies. But they're so good and they help so many practitioners, I think, in so many ways. But you talk about this three-part model that you've developed. And so the three parts, and I'll let you digress on it, but exposome, interfaces, and self. So can you touch on that? I mean, you've shared some good slides in the past showing about those, but tell me about that and just, you know, your evolution again of that framework from that Inflam Aging paper and things like that. But it's a great model.
Yeah, it's really not so much that I have the time. I just like once I get into the topic, it's kind of hard to stop myself.
I'm the exact same way. Sometimes I need to just sign off from my email rather than get into something or reply. Yeah. My wife will be like, "Hey, you're sucked into your email again." But go ahead.
Yeah, so the term is Inflam Aging, right? It goes back into probably the early 2000s, and it's more of a term used in research for cellular aging, like in the anti-aging world. And the definition more or less is chronic, low-grade, sterile inflammation. And they talk a lot about the cells that aren't made properly, or they're not functioning properly, and they're supposed to self-implode and auto-destruct, but they don't. They become these, medically, they're called senescent cells. That's or aging cells. But, I just kind of looked at that because they talk about that as with three components to Inflam Aging, right? Inflammation causing aging, cellular aging. And they call it the self, the non-self, and the quasi-self. We don't need to get into more detail because I just looked at it and I was like, well, wait a second. Can't we just translate that model, upgrade into like a macro level instead of a cellular level? And so instead of a chronic, not so sterile and not low grade, but high grade, people who are symptomatic, right? And so I just took that self, non-self, quasi-self and said, okay, self, that's self-explanatory, non-self, okay, sure, right? And that's the same as the exposome, by definition. And then the quasi-self that they, it's a little bit, slightly bit of a shift, but ultimately, this is what I say to people all the time, like anything we read about, and this is the thing for me, like anything we read about, anything we learn about, anything we hear in a podcast like yours, anything that I walk into now in a conference, it could be the craziest three fire hydrants of information all weekend long, but I expect that I'll be able to take every topic that I learn about anywhere, and also anything that I can test for in a patient in whatever form of testing, energetics or blood, stool, urine, whatever, everything should fall into one of those three categories. Mm-hmm. Self, everything and anything that comes from me, hormones, immune system, neurotransmitters, methylation, genetics, even autoimmunity, which is not good, but it's self-attacking self, right? Autonomic nervous system, list goes on and on. Mitochondria stuff, it's all self. Then the opposite, just on a philosophical level, is the opposite. It's non-self, which is basically everything in our environment that doesn't come from us. It's mostly all bugs and toxins. If we look at the official definition of inflammation, it's immune system response to not just bugs and toxins, but also injury. So you could say cellular injury or macro level injury, but nonetheless, we just stick with bugs and toxins, because it's more of a thing than an event, right? Injury is like an event, but bugs and toxins, right? And that doesn't mean everything's bad, but they just don't come from the self. And then the third category is where the self and the non-self are interacting, which is because we don't, as I say to patients all the time, we don't live in a bubble. We're not meant to live in a bubble. We need the far majority of the bacteria in our microbiome in our colon, right? And so the illustration I often give is that those interfaces, those regulatory junction points where the self and non-self are interacting 24/7 and every millisecond in between, it's like the TSA at the airport, it's the bouncer at the club, it's the toll booth on the highway. Like, you got to be able to regulate who goes in and out, how much people or things are allowed to go in and out and pass through or not, and like who needs some vigilance and, marking and tagging them, might want to keep an eye on that character, right? And so, it's just really helped me be able to file and organize my thinking, both in conferences from learning stuff, as well as, you and I, we have patients all the time who are like, I just read this on blah, blah, blah. What do you think about this? I just read about this. What do you think about this? And like, you're talking about one topic and it seems like they're coming out of left field talking about another topic, and no judgment about that, right? It's great that people are learning all this stuff and reading that, but how do you tie them together, right? How do I keep that? How do I explain, like, hey, what you read and is it's great. I validate that. And sometimes it's like, okay, that seems a little bit less pertinent to what we're talking about. And other times it could be pertinent.
Absolutely.
Right? If I'm talking to someone who's totally new to all this stuff and they're just now kind of getting their feet wet and understanding what tick-borne illness is about. And all of a sudden they're like, wait a second, I just read online all this stuff about mold toxins. Like, maybe it's, I got that. A lot of the symptoms are the same, right? I'm like, okay, look, they're both bugs and toxins that ultimately all are impacting your immune system. They're just different entities. And yeah, you might have both. It's not one or the other. Like, we all have a bunch of stuff. So it just helps people. It helps me for sure. And it helps, you know, it's been really magical for me actually to frame stuff in that paradigm, and patients just totally get it. And it's really been incredible.
Well, it's super cool. Cause I think that, you know, and I actually, you know, had told you in my outline initially that I wanted to start off by talking about autoimmunity. I kind of forgot about that, but that's kind of how I got into this was, you know, again, as a chiropractor, I knew a lot of science and different things, but autoimmunity, immune system wasn't my specialty. It was more the nervous system, you know, neurology. But you see people with these chronic and complex autoimmune cases. And then, I start reading books. First, before journals, I start reading books, you know, Tom O'Brien's book and other people's book, The Autoimmune Fix, and Karazian's books and otherwise. And I read 5 autoimmune books and it's like, man, they're all kind of saying the same thing. And that's what you're saying too. I think that there's a lot of people out there that are saying different things, but if you hear it through your framework, it's kind of all saying the same thing. We've got these interfaces that protect us from the outside world. You know, in the autoimmune world, what you read is that leaky gut is the root cause of autoimmunity. And a lot of books will say that. And it's like, okay, then you've got a leaky gut if you've got autoimmunity. But then you come to realize you could have a leaky lung, you could have a leaky sinus. It's these leaky barriers that are allowing foreign particles in, and then the immune system is reacting against them. And as you get to know the science more, it's very, very true, but it's also an elementary version. But everybody's almost saying the same thing, even though one person might be saying mold, one person might be saying pesticides, one person might be saying tick-borne infections. They're all really, really similar when you look at it through that lens. So can you tell us a little bit more about the exposome? What does exposome mean? What is that the definition of that?
Yeah, I mean, the definition is just this, you know, OME is just like the study or knowledge of anything, in this case, exposure related.
So anything that we're exposed to. Yeah. So I think that's a common word for you and I, and for, you know, again, I always point back to Dr. Vigidani's book back here. It's a very, very common word in the Cyrex world and the autoimmune world, but it's everything that your body's been exposed to. And I think that another just concept of that too, that I learned early on from Dr. Bruce McEwen and things, is the concept of allostatic load, is that stressors accumulate. You know, as you get an injury, as you get a head trauma playing freshman football, that those injuries accumulate, and they're all part of the inflammaging. They're all part of, you know, the progression of certain things, like even neurodegenerative diseases. That's part of your exposome, but those stressors accumulate, and stressors can be traumas like injuries. They can be thoughts. You can have stressful thoughts. You can have toxins, and they're all stressors, and stressors accumulate. So that's everything that you're exposed to. And then what's your definition of interfaces? Because interfaces is kind of your part two. I would call that, to me, I use the word like barriers. Maybe that's like more of a Sam Yannick word, but barrier integrity, supporting barrier integrity, blood-brain barrier, leaky gut, lung, sinus. What, touch on interfaces a little bit, or let me even just say too, like, tell me about some of the ways that you detect some of these things. Like, if you're concerned about somebody's interfaces, how do you detect that, or what are your next steps? Or let's, if we can go back upstream to the exposome, how do you detect that, or what are you suspicious of? Is it through a history? Is it through, you know, certainly asking people if they've had head traumas, if they've had infections, if they've lived in mold? How do you go and evaluate all three of these things? Exposome, interfaces, and then self, I imagine, is labs, you know, looking deeper in the self to see how things are functioning internally. But how do you differentiate those things, or which one you need to target first, or how do you kind of start?
So, interfaces is, as I was saying, it's like the junction points of the self and non-self. It's the regulation. So I don't tend to use the word barrier that often, because it sort of connotates to me like a solid wall. And again, like, you know, it is in a solid wall. We're not trying to segregate ourselves.
But a, But a screen is a screen door is a selectively permeable barrier.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so you know, I typically use the terms like a junction point or the meeting interfaces, between self and self. So that's the definition of the interfaces. And then as far as how do you evaluate for this stuff, I mean, yeah, it's either lab testing, meaning like stool, hair, blood, urine, whatever, breath testing. It's either lab testing or it's energy testing or combinations. It's usually combinations for me, but it's all across the board. It's not like you said something about lab testing for the self category and, you know, questionnaires or something else, maybe for other ones. No, for me, it's all lab or energetic testing across the board for all three. So the bigger deal for me isn't, we could get into like, you know, which labs we use or, you know, what kinds of methodologies of labs and all that kind of stuff. But again, similar to what you were saying earlier about like, you know, Cellcore idea is like, hey, we're not getting so niched into one topic. It's the bigger story of all these exposome topics are causing inflammation, as environmental exposures. And so in the same way, I'm not saying it's not important about which labs, but I don't find it as big of a deal to get into the weeds about arguing which lab is, you know, one or two percentile better than the other in accuracy, sensitivity, specificity, et cetera. It's more important to say, did you look at the other topics as a whole? Right. A lot of times people are like, oh man, those first, well, let's not say 30, let's say 20 pounds, right? 20 pounds. Like, man, the first 10, first 12, maybe even 15 is like, yeah, I came off decently well, but man, these last five, like it is hard, right? It's the same thing. Like if someone's got chronic inflammation or autoimmunity, whichever way you want to call it, it doesn't matter. It's the same term, same concept. Man, you can get a long way, you know, you can get a decent to long way of improvement by addressing just a select one or two topics if you hit the right topics with the nail on the head. But when we have to keep nailing, going deeper and deeper, trying to address and like feel like we're trying to get 100% eradication or resolution of that topic, I argue that as practitioners, we're not looking in the right direction. We're looking too deeply and we have not looked broadly enough because there's other topics that are causing inflammation that you didn't touch. And you're going to get a lot more yield of reducing inflammation that way than trying to get that last 5 pounds of that whatever topic you've been treating for the last 6, 9, 12 months or whatever.
Absolutely. The metaphor that I use is like golf. If you can bomb the ball down the fairway, great. But if you're suck at chipping or putting, you're not going to score well. And you've just got to be a little bit balanced in all the areas. And there's usually some area that's being overlooked if you're putting all your eggs in one basket. And I would say this, like, you're more of a lime guy, more of a mold guy. I say to everybody, I say, hey, to a man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So I'm not going to try to put you in the mold basket. My thing is you have mold, but what else along those lines? You just got to breathe the clean air and get out of the moldy environment. But what else? Because I think that for a lot of people, if they know they have mold, then every symptom, every flare is like, was it mold? Was I re-exposed? Did my cousin bring mold in on their clothes? And it's like, no, that's not always that simple. There are other factors that play in there as well. I don't care about the lab testing. I'm just curious, like if somebody comes to you with, you know, 20 symptoms and they've seen 10 other people, are you somebody that is starting from scratch? Are you like, I went to this seminar recently and the guy says, everybody that comes in my office, we do $2,500 of labs on them right off the bat. And so I let everybody know that everybody gets the same labs. We test everything on everybody and then we go from there. Are you more customized and personalized based on the things that you're kind of suspicious of based on energetic testing or otherwise? Or you kind of look at everything or how do you treat a patient?
It depends on which entity we're talking about. In our office, you know, where we take insurance and all that stuff, it's one thing. Like, you know, even though our visits are long, people are more apt to, and I don't know, maybe it's more just our rhythm of what we've gotten used to over time, where we might be looking for certain topics, you know, in a progressive approach. But in our virtual practice, that's a different entity than my office. We've heavily adopted a totally different paradigm where our goal is to help people like as quickly as we can. And that also will lead to less expense for them. Okay. So it's a big ask up front of the patients. We totally get that and we make that clear, but it's very similar to what you described for somebody at a seminar. It's not a cookie cutter thing. We don't say like, yeah, you're going to have to spend all this money and you're going to have to do all these testing. We take a look at what labs they've given us. And, you know, if it's like certain kinds of labs, if they're good, if they've done it in the last year, okay, we're good. If they've done this in the last 2 years, okay, we're good. We'll take those, you know, and it's all negotiated. If somebody wants to like repeat it, sure, we'll help them do that. But we have like a template of what we're looking for as the big dog players, we call it, in each of these three, you know, self exposome and interface or, you know, intersect categories. We don't like make everybody go through the same hoop that they've already done in the last, you know, weeks or months or whatever. So we try to customize it. And, you know, of course, certain people with certain insurances, they can get certain testing, you know, that they don't have to pay for, et cetera, versus other ones. So, yeah, we have like a framework. You know, I'm much more of a framework guy than a cookie cutter guy.
Exactly. Touch on, if you will, like that framework that you have. And you know, whether it's a specific case or just in general, but like in the context of autoimmunity, you know, somebody with Hashimoto's or rheumatoid arthritis or somebody with diagnosed autoimmunity, because obviously that's the target of my podcast. A lot of people find the podcast because they search autoimmunity and that's just how they stumble upon it. But I speak to a little bit of everybody. Not everybody has diagnosed autoimmunity. And I would also say, I think that there is a, for sure, an epidemic of undiagnosed autoimmunity, of antibody-mediated attacks and antibody-mediated inflammation that doesn't fall into the MS, Hashimoto's, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis category. There's all these different autoantibodies that are tested, especially in the research world, that just aren't really commercially available or aren't that diagnostic. But how would you describe how you would apply that model for an autoimmune patient? And I'm sure it's just looking through each one of them, but do you think that there's any one of the three that are more important, or is it just weighing those things based on their symptoms and complaints and based on their labs? Or how would you put somebody through that model if they're dealing with an autoimmune condition, that you have a known autoimmune condition?
It's the same. It actually doesn't matter if someone...
That's kind of what I figured,
or not. It's the same. And we don't, it's not a sequential and like rank priority between the three topics. It's all one process.
But would you say that each person has their own specific ranking of like, some people might be more like, some people have bad self or self-talk or things like that. Some people might have worse interfaces. I'm going to flip you off. Some people might have worse exposome and have had 10 head traumas and things like that. So as you're working through a case, do they get prioritized? Or no?
It's not so much the prioritization. The ultimate question is whether someone's got a straight, you know, an official autoimmunity diagnosis or not. And, you know, we all know, and I'm sure all your podcast listeners know that, you know, autoimmunity is a really loosely used term, right? I mean, basically like anything that's like chronic inflammation that can't be explained in conventional medicine often sort of gets, you know, tritely or glibly said, it's some kind of autoimmune condition. So, you know, but I think ultimately it's kind of almost synonymous or heavily overlapping with just chronic inflammation. Mm-hmm. But that's also a very broadly, generically used term too. So, you know, ultimately the question, when I'm seeing somebody who's got like a mystery condition, straight autoimmunity, conventional diagnosis of autoimmunity, or sort of loosely used autoimmunity term, whatever, the question is, what does this person's bug and toxin profile look like in totality, as well as specific items within that bug and toxin profile, because they're not all weighted the same, right? Foods like a green pepper is technically under the bug and toxin category. It's not a toxin, but it's not self, and it can lead to a person's immune reaction, right? So you feed 10 people green pepper, it's not going to be the same prediction of problems versus you give 10 people Lyme disease, okay? So what is this person's bug and toxin profile in totality and specifics within that, and ultimately, how much has that impacted the person's self, specifically the immune system? And the weaker, or, you know, the weaker the interfaces, the intersects, specifically the gut, then the more that person is going to have, you know, more damage or penetration of unwanted intruders through the castle wall, if you will. All right. And so ultimately, when you say, you know, if I know somebody's got a straight out, a definitive autoimmune condition, Hashimoto's, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, whatever, that just basically tells me they're further down the road.
Mm-hmm.
immune disruption. I mean, not everybody, I tell patients, it's not everybody has this exact model, right? And I don't know how far, this might be a little too much detail, but look, if we're talking about the TH1, TH2, TH17 balance, right? If someone has a normal balance system and they mount a TH1 response and then the TH2 comes up in upregulation as well to balance out the TH1, and then the problem goes away and the TH1 comes back down to balance and the TH2 then also comes back down to balance, we're great. We're golden. If the bug and toxin problem doesn't go away and TH1 is the appropriate response to that and the fire keeps burning and TH1 burns out, right? The water's no more, the firefighters are all pooped out, TH1 burns out, TH2 stays elevated, and then it further does its usual job of suppressing TH1, keeping TH1 in check. But now TH1's like tired, burned out, and now it's being stomped on, like, pouring salt in the wound. Now you got TH2 dominance, right? Which is like the mast cells, eosinophils, IgE antibodies, those are the classics, right? There's a lot of people like this. People have asthma, bad allergies, eczema. These are all TH2 dominant people.
Gut inflammation, food sensitivities, yeah.
Yeah, and so, but then over time, that person is more apt to develop autoimmunity because one of TH1's natural jobs is to keep TH17 in check. And if you don't keep TH17 in check, now TH17 is like synonymous with autoimmunity. So if a person has a definitive diagnosis of autoimmunity, in my mind, they've already got a TH17 dominant immune system on their adapted T cell, on that level of thinking anyway. And it's not to say everyone's gone through that exact progression that we just talked about, where if I work backwards and I say, well, they've got a TH17 dominance, they probably also have a TH2 dominance. It might not be as bad as a 17, but it's likely what led them to the 17 dominance. Mm-hmm. If they have a TH2 dominance, then that likely means they've got a TH1 burnout, right? And so then what are the bugs and toxins that led to that TH1 burnout? And where TH1 is what responds to intracellular bugs and toxins, then, which is the majority of the bugs and toxins, by numbers, in terms of categories, then yeah, now the question is like, what are the bugs and toxins that are there? Can we clear them out to a better degree and let the TH1 like come back to life and revive?
And takes then the pressure off of it.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, not everybody went through that exact progression, but a lot of people, safely presume that a lot of people have.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Which I think is Sam Yannick's model, is that not everybody starts off TH2 dominant, but as you progress, you get more gut inflammation, and gut inflammation begets more inflammation in the hollow spaces. And then the sometimes people get an infection and TH1 really kicks off their autoimmunity. But over time, that generally happens. So that's kind of how you're working backwards through, especially the T cell polarizations. That's interesting. And I think that's great for even, again, the people that we see, and just even for people to look through, because everybody is has the same amount of information available. So they're judging, is it foods? Is it infections? Is it mold? And you got to go through and look at all of those things and just kind of, again, that allostatic load. Tell me about some of these things that I know that you use. Give me your opinion on them. Give me about how you, introduce them or what you glean from them. But I'm just always curious about, again, not to say that it's the right thing or the wrong thing, but just the tools that you use. We all use different tools. We all use different supplements. We all use different labs. There's a lot of overlap in those. But I think that you and I, even if we're both seeing success with patients, we might be using two different lab companies and two different supplement companies, but the framework is very similar. Tell me about muscle testing and energetic testing and how you began to implement that in practice. How helpful would you say that it's been for you clinically? Tell me about that kind of evolution of doing the energetic testing.
Yeah, I mean, it was born out of just proving to myself that trying to test for worm parasites specifically, but both worm and cellular parasites is just so difficult and challenging. Or I look at it as like the hardest thing to test for in some sort of body sampling.
Has muscle testing helped make that easier?
Yeah, so that's where I went into that because because
I'm sold just by that. That's my only reason for being intrigued. I don't know anything about muscle testing, even as a chiropractor. I've know a little bit, but I've never been to any of the cell core seminars or anything like that. So that is why I'm intrigued by it, is some of the things that you can't find in blood, urine, stool, hair, whatever. But
yeah, so I'll say the first place I learned about something of this nature, energetic medicine, let's say, is at an ILADS conference. It was a lot of years ago. One of the board members, a great guy, Stephen Morass out of Wisconsin, gave a talk on something. And I was like, how do you make that decision on which forms these bugs are in, or which co-infections that we don't have tests for? How do you make a decision of that? So I catch him in the foyer, and he tells me, like, oh, we have this little box in our office, right? And it was like the Zydo and Quest machines. So we got one of those, but I didn't really formally train on it. And it was clunky, too much information. I didn't know what to do with it. So years ago, I was like, you know what? At some point, I might have to learn how to do that muscle testing, but you know, I just kept putting it off. Well, again, when I fast forward to 2019-ish, you know, immune system and parasites and stepping into the cell core world, and then seeing, oh, they teach the muscle testing. So, and I found, you know, referencing what you said earlier about their paradigm and their thinking, it's like, it was so synonymous with this three-part model that I had kind of, you know, derived for myself, or translated for myself from the inflammaging model. It just was like, I found a home. Like I just felt like I was in my place, right, with them. And so it was such synergy that I was like, yeah, if they teach muscle testing, I'm going to do that. Right. So I stepped into that world, you know, kind of just outside my box further. And it took me months to sort of get used to it. I mean, it's a really fascinating thing for those of us, you know, I think you and I are very similarly, if we're like analysis paralysis, over analysis paralysis type people, and, or as patients, you know, a lot of patients are like that too. It is really challenging actually, but it's so personally rewarding beyond the professional part, because it's really, it requires me to go inside myself and be even more self-aware about my biases and being intentional about stepping outside of that when I'm doing the testing. So multiple times a day, I, in just for split seconds or a couple minutes here and there, or sometimes longer, when I'm doing that energy testing, it just really, it's almost like simultaneously doing meditation, treating myself for just personal, you know, parasympathetic sure. response while I'm doing it. So it's really cool. Sure,
yeah, you're like kind of in the zone of just like so engaged in what that person's energy is telling you, and that the whole rest of the world kind of stands still. I could see that being kind of cathartic, but I don't know if that's what you mean, but that, I could totally see that.
More or less. Yeah, I mean, there's some piece to it without getting details about it. So yeah, I mean, that's why I stepped into it. And it's, I gotta say, it's been beyond magical. If I tell you stories about this, like I start crying like every time I tell the same stories, and I cry every single time. It's so
basically the gist of what you're saying is that you've had some basically miracle results that would not have come had you not been in the energetic testing world.
Absolutely. Right. And
I'm sold.
And a lot of it was like one of my favorite, you know, case examples is one where, like it just proved me so wrong, right? That's what I love about the story, and I'm can feel myself getting choked up just thinking.
I know exactly what you mean.
Because like this. All right, so I'll try to keep it brief. This college student was like, so remember Mark? Like, you know, we diagnosed this Lyme thing, you know, years ago, and we've been working on mold toxins and SIBO and all of this stuff. And you know, we never went back to the Lyme thing because the sequence, you know, for a lot of mold practitioners, people who know about mold and Lyme both, is like mold first, right? Immune system suppression, you know, a lot of inflammation. Try to address the mold first, and then you're going to have more success with the Lyme thing. We never went back to it, and so they tell me, I've been reading online. I really think I need IV antibiotics, and I was like, oh God, no! Like. That's so much work, and you're in another state, and how the heck are we going to, I'm being polite. I'm like, no, I totally hear you. I appreciate you've done the reading, blah, 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 but like, you know, in consideration, you know, that's usually for later. Like, and you're likely not going to have to need the IVs. You're not going to have to need that, but here we are. And somewhere in that conversation, we start, you know, I introduced the energy thing, and this is virtual. We weren't even in person. And I walk her through it with some trust that thing, like, hey, you're probably going to think I'm a quack, but let's just give it a go. And I won't go through all the details of how, you know, I do the testing and such, not the methodology, not the technique itself, but the actual assessing the questions and such. And here I am, like, what is the number one cause of this person's, you know, that symptom. I won't get into details for, you know, privacy. And I was like, oh my God, I'm coming out with Borrelia. Right. In my head, I'm like, Mark, this is such crap. You're doing your best to, like, you know, step out of the situation and just be detached and unbiased. But like, you so much don't want to have to go down that road that somehow this is coming back and biting you. And you're like feeding that in somehow. This can't be right. Right. And so then I go to the next step and I'm like, okay, let's just take it for what it's worth. And so how about, can we, you know, the next step, I turn around like, okay, can we treat that? Like, can we complete that? Can we clear that with oral therapy? Which, like, 99%+ of the time the answer is yes. And I get no. I was like, oh my God, Mark, you are such full of crap. Like, you're totally fighting this too hard. And it's like, your counter psyche is like fighting. It's like coming out even though you don't want it. Right. You're trying too hard to suppress it, even though you don't think you are. But subconsciously, you must be, because like, there's no way.
Then you're getting in your head about getting in your head about getting in your head.
Yeah. I'm like, there's no way you're getting exactly what she is telling you that she thinks she needs.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm sitting there voicing, going like, you might think I'm just trying to like feed your, you know, I'm just trying to say something that you want to hear, but I'm going to tell you right now, like, I don't want to do this. I went down this road because I didn't say it earlier, but I don't want to do this. And it turns out, like, it's like, Borrelia is the number one thing. Ceftriaxone is like a top issue to address, and with IV. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to respect the process and we're going to try it. And it was a pain in the frickin' butt to get that pick line and get all set up out of state. I was a nightmare, but man, 3 weeks into treatment, I text her just out of the blue and just curious. She was on my mind. I was like, just curious, like, how are you doing? And I'm thinking, like, we've made minimal to no progress for 2 years, probably, right? Between another practitioner in our office. And I'm thinking, like, best case scenario is like, yeah, I'm starting to see some benefit. All right. But like, I'm expecting nothing. And she texts me back and says, it's been 3 weeks and I'm like 70% better.
Mm.
And my heart melted. I started crying on the spot and I just about peed my pants. I was like, you gotta be friggin' kidding me. And the real take home, this isn't like a pride and ego thing, because it's the opposite. It was like, that would have never happened if I kept following my own intuition or teaching or learning or whatever, because it was never on my radar. I was like, no, that's gonna be down the line. But when I did this, I was like, Mark, yeah, you can't, you know, step out of the way, Mark. Like, stop getting in people's way. I mean, it was just magical. And I've had a number of stories like that. Look, it's not like 100%. This is not like the magic wand.
Sure.
But man, there've been so many examples of something along those lines that it's just been mind-boggling, completely mind-boggling.
And I've read, you know, Dr. Neil Nathan's book, Energetic Diagnosis, and it's just like, it's undeniable that whether you use bioresonance testing or energy testing, we are all using intuition and different things like that, and some amount of guesswork and getting out of your way and like, I always say that God sends people to my office in waves. And like, so if I just saw a Lyme patient and the next person comes in and says, hey, I think I got Lyme, like I'm cued into that. Like, they're here for a reason and they're telling me that for a reason. So I think that's so interesting that it was the patient's intuition that might have led you to that, and then that's kind of how you discover that. Have you ever heard of Dr. Simon Yu, this guy down in St. Louis? He does some of the muscle testing seminars. That's, you know, within driving distance for me. So I've looked into his muscle testing seminars and things like that just to see how I could expand my toolbox, because we said him and the cell core are the two that I've looked into, but I've never moved forward with any of them. I got another chiropractor here in town, the guy that adjusts me, he'll adjust me this Friday. He's done muscle testing for 30 years. So sometimes I'll have people take supplements to him if they see him and just say, hey, let me know how this, you know, if that's something that they subscribe to, then I'm not opposed to it. It's just not a tool in my tool belt. And I think that in the alternative world, especially, you have to suspend disbelief on some things, because sometimes they seem like, especially maybe to a more conventional trained medical doctor, they seem like quackery. But to a chiropractor, you know, I'm pretty used to that word. But it's crazy how much intuition, how much energetic things there are, even if you're not muscle testing, even if you're virtual, how much you can glean from a person if you kind of step out of the way and kind of look at, like, okay, why is this person here? Why is this person telling me this? Why are, you know, there's so much overlap and so much reason to that. Is that anything that you vibe with or agree with? Like, do you feel like I was, you know, to me, it's I'll say it's a God thing that it's like, but I get people sent to my office in waves. Like right now, my big wave right now is this like interleukin six, inability to tolerate exercise in kind of the long COVID population, leading to kind of like a shortness of breath. But it's like, it's all about this inability to tolerate exercise. And so the more that I'm seeing this, and then sometimes seeing snips and things, but anyway, do you find that personally, that do things come into your office in waves?
You know, I'm a big proponent and I'm a big proponent about self-awareness and biases. You know, I think I'll probably a little overly so. A lot of it's just my upbringing. I think some of it's the cultural. My parents are from China and Taiwan. There's so much like, you know, self-deprecation and, you know, lifting other people or to the point of a facade, quite honestly. I'm more of a believer, and my perspective is more geared towards not so much about like, I don't think about that things come to me in waves or cases or people or conditions. I think it much more about, and our office staff talks about this. It's not just me, another practitioner in our office, the one who introduced me to chronic Lyme. We say the same thing. Like once we think about, or we learn about some new topic, then, you know, we start looking for it in a lot of people. Right. And so it feels like it's the bright new shiny toy. And, you know, that, so it feels like with waves, I'm more familiar or suspicious that when it feels like I'm going through waves, it's more based on what I'm looking out for. It very well may be, like you said, that it's, you know, what's coming to me that's not of my doing or whatever. But I usually think more about, you know, more about what I'm likely biasing by my own just awareness and attention being brought to those things. And quite honestly, I try to fight that. I mean, not fight it, but I try to be aware of it. Right. So like I walk out of a conference and, oh, wow, there's this whole new tool, whether it's a lab, a test, or a condition to look for, or think about, whatever. I know in the next few weeks, maybe even a few months, a lot of times I'm going to be using that tool, whether it's testing or treatment or whatever, or just thinking process. But, you know, I try to keep myself in check and say, okay, hey, look, Mark, not everybody's got this condition. You're thinking about it all the time, but like, don't go overboard with it. Don't stray like way far out on the pendulum swing. So anyway,
not everybody needs the new tool like Aqualorin or something like that. It's like it's a tool in the tool belt, but you don't use every tool for every project. Yeah. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about four things, which like you're going to laugh because they're not four small things. Mold, Lyme, parasites, and mast cells. And, you know, I'm lumping those in some regard, Mark, just for the sake of time, but like, mold and Lyme have been on your radar before parasites. How do you differentiate between the two? I mean, the answer might be the testing. The answer might be the bioenergetic testing. But they're so often great mimickers. You know, we talk about syphilis and other things like that. But they so often can I don't know, just be there together. And then with parasites, and then mast cells and histamine. Like, I just think that those four things in my practice, those four things are really central to my practice of like mold, Lyme and tick-borne infections, parasites and gut infections, and then mast cells with basically all three of those. But touch on any of those things. You know, you've done a great webinar for practitioners, a primer on mast cell disorders. But how do you, if somebody comes in, let's say with, again, a known histamine response, how do you differentiate as far as which one of those you're going to go after? Or let's say they have mold, Lyme, parasites, and you know they have all of them. How are you going to determine the order of operation? Or just, it doesn't have to be an exact treatment algorithm, but just for a lot of people that have all of those, you could fill in heavy metals with another one, but a lot of people have all of those things and they're spinning their wheels on kind of where to start. What are your thoughts with those things? What are your thoughts with just even maybe the incidence of those things, you know, in our typical patient base, mast cells and histamine being such a growing thing, just even in the last 3-4 years, just in the COVID era. But I'm sorry that that's such a big question, but just give me any thoughts on any of those things if you can.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out. I mean, we need to go 10 minutes into this or anything like that. It's more just like how to start the response. You know, I think it's kind of hard to, understate when you say, like, you know, how do you know which one to go after? I mean, it's really hard to understate this, that when I think through that three-part framework, mold toxins, tick-borne illness of whatever sorts underneath there, parasites, cellular or worm, they're all bugs and toxins, right? So I just, you know, I think part of it is just for me, like, it goes back to how I try to be fair about things. And so I try my best to keep myself in check and go, like, don't play favorites with Lyme. Don't play favorites with mold toxins, even though, like, yeah, I'm sitting in the president role of the ICI and, you know, it's environmentally acquired illness, right? EAI, International Society of Environmentally Acquired Illness. So it's broad in term, but yeah, let's be real. Like mold toxins is like our bread and butter, like our show, a calling card, right?
Sure.
But for me personally, I do my best to say, don't play favorites, Mark, and don't just assume and prejudice that everything is that or that or that, or that those are the big dogs in every single person. So I don't have a mindset of which one do I go after? Okay. I say my mindset is the likelihood is that a lot of people have combinations of all three or all three.
Exactly. Maybe
100% yeah. The next people have all three, but the deal is not which one to go after. The deal is which one is playing a bigger priority for that person in their symptomatology. Right. And so if I had to
which one
down,
to go after first.
Yeah. And so that's where, yes. So like if I do, if I'm, I can't, you know, I mean, you're actually helping me reflect and realize even to a greater degree how much I lean on energy testing now. All right. Because I, you know, ultimately what happens is I ask, what is your top symptom or your top three symptoms? You know, what do we want to address first for you by symptom? And then when I do the energy testing through that symptom, that's where I'll come out with my rank order. Now, we have in our virtual practice that we do, you know, locally and nationally, et cetera, when we address this type of stuff, we have a sort of framework approach where there's a default template. Okay. We have rationale why mold toxins, you know, as a default require and warrant a frontline sequence, part of the sequence. We have a rationale why worm parasites deserve a part of that frontline sequence and why tick-borne illness tends to be more of a back-end sequence, you know, as CellCore often touts as well. But, you know, not specifically for those same reasons, but nonetheless, we have rationale for that. But in most cases nowadays, I'm verifying whether that's really the case for that individual from some kind of energy resonance testing through whatever symptom we're trying to address. So on a default level, okay, like putting the energy resonance testing aside, on a default level, which ones do you go for first? Well, really, in treatment sequence, as we teach the practitioners that we do our training courses with the training courses that we provide offer, the first phase is like prep work, okay, right? Drainage stuff, which is a very sober community, you know, concept, but nothing new. It's just the terminology's, you know, clearer. So drainage work and biofilm work, and then phase two is addressing those mold toxins, and mold when you need to, mold in the body that is, and worm parasites, because these guys are like foundational cornerstones to that perseverate. I'm sorry, I take it back. Phase two is addressing some of those topics that make other treatments intolerable for people over time, right? So mast cells is a big player there. It's not the only one. There's three topics that we kind of talk about more specifically, but mast cells is a big one. Because if people can't tolerate their therapies because of mast cell disorder with what they're taking orally, then good luck trying to get very far. All right. And then phase three, that's where we emphasize the mold toxins and the worm parasites. And then phase four is like a conglomeration of a lot of bugs and toxins. And that's where it's much more case by case once you get to that depth of the sequence. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's where for us in our FMCG program, it's like, hey, if you've got a pain focus, it's very, very, very predictable you're going to have tick-borne stuff going on. Okay, pain, autoimmunity pain. I don't care what kind of pain. It's pain. It's autoimmune because that's where cartilage, you know, right? Joints, muscles, et cetera. That's where those bugs live. If you've got much more of a neuro focus, we're thinking about like viruses, right? Like everybody knows Epstein-Barr is a big part of chronic fatigue, et cetera, et cetera. But fatigue, like good luck trying to figure out what that is. That's like a combination of everything or anything. It could be anything and everything. But on the flip side, if you got a really gut focus, we're definitely going to be thinking much more about like H. pylori, yeast topics, SIFO, not just SIBO, and good luck trying to diagnose SIFO without energy testing, in my mind anyway. So, you know, that's where it breaks down much more nuanced by the patient and then what symptoms they're wrestling with. So.
Then let me ask you a couple questions about each one of those. How about, let's say, mold? Do you do urine mycotoxin? Do you do Sears markers? What are your preferred lab methodologies?
Yeah, I do both. I mean, if you mainly pick one or the other, then it's the urine mold toxins. But commonly I do both. And I don't do the full SIRS panel. It's really large and it's a lot of testing, et cetera. Right. I mean, we ask enough of our patients of all kinds of testing. We're not going to get like overboard with just one topic. So, you know, we do a lot of TGF beta 1 marker, and C4A is really hard to do, but MMP9 we do a lot of. There's several, you know, MSH, et cetera, VEGF.
That's the same. That's the same with me. I'm mostly TGF beta, mostly because of cost reasons. But yeah.
So if I had to pick one, it's the urine mold toxins. Yeah. Okay.
What about for colonization? Preferred testing: oat tests, stool tests, energetic testing. Yeah. Like you just said, SIFO wise.
Yeah, you know, again, like it's a reflection to me. Like I do so much of that with energy testing now because it's like on the spot. It's so fast and you know, easy. And good luck trying to identify mold or yeast from the sinuses or the gut or otherwise. Yeah. It's really hard.
Well, and you touch on that a lot in the forums where people will still, you know, inadvertently maybe say something about mold and you're like, well, mold needs to be differentiated between mycotoxins and colonization. Those are two different things and they're treated in two different ways. And you can have them both. You can have one, you can have the other, but they're not always the same thing.
Yeah.
How often do you use prescription meds in, I know you have a traditional concierge type insurance-based medical practice, but I'm talking in the mold, Lyme, chronic illness patients. How often are you using pharmaceuticals along with supplementation? And can you touch on some of the more commonly used pharmaceuticals, or is it antifungals, or using, it sounds like IV antibiotics aren't necessarily your first thing on the line, but they're still a tool in your tool belt that I don't have in my tool belt. How often are you using those, and what are some that you found the most effective?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I don't know that I think about it as like, what do I find most effective? Because I'm just such open game to everything. The first differentiator for me is, does the patient have a preference between pharma and non-pharma? Right. So we ask that of patients, and you know, we get to know our patients well in our brick and mortar anyway. In our virtual, you know, different entity, we ask that up front because that helps us with decision making. When I apply the energy testing, once we figure out, you know, the mapping and the sequence, then, you know, we go into asking, okay, well, you know, can we clear this, you know, through oral therapies alone? And if so, then how many items do we need? Let's just say we come up with four items. Okay. And then the first question is, okay, how many of these items are pharma? And then how many are non-pharma? So I'm open game. I'm completely open game. And I get patients who their preference is non-pharma. Like I know that. And I'm, you know, and I'm assessing this through. We've talked about they understand what I'm doing here with energy testing. And I'm telling them, like, I know you prefer non-prescriptions, so I'm just telling you, like, you know, the best options for you, I'm coming up with three out of four are pharma. And sometimes they'll change their mind. And other times they won't. And I'm like, that's fine. It's not like it's a deal breaker. It's not like something else isn't going to work. It just may not be energetically like your best options.
Yeah.
But
and so people if people know, and I'm sure for you, they can feel this, but if people know that you have their best interests at heart, they just want to know what's going to work. And as long as you're not, you know, selling them a bill of goods and you're not putting them on something that's going to harm them, they just want to know that it's going to work and that you've got a clinical thought process. And so I think that probably permeates through for you. I have one last question and then I'll let you go. And I'm only bringing this up because, again, I'm not biased towards anything or away from anything, but I also see people come to me and they've spent 20 grand on IV antibiotics or on hyperbaric or on different things. I want to ask about your thoughts on some of the more high ticket price items versus cheap, easy things. And again, I think they all have a role, but ozone therapy, hyperbaric oxygen, blood microscopy, IV treatments, how much of those are you doing in your brick and mortar versus supplements, coffee enema, sauna, castor oil packs? Those things are generally pretty cheap. And so I'm admittedly certainly a bang for the buck guy. And some of that has to do with my scope of, you know, what I'm allowed to deliver. But I also see people that have wasted a lot of money and they come in and they're just jaded. Thoughts on expensive big things versus inexpensive things? Or is it just thoughts on any of those of like, hey, this really works well, so I use it, and this I don't feel like works well. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I'm helping some folks locally initiate a clinic that's going to do IVs. And you know, I wonder, right? Because we don't do IVs in our clinic in our office. You know, starting in 2014 here, we've never done them. And at times I wonder, but it's not common that I think to myself like, man, if only we had IVs. But at the same time, like the I just gave you, I'm like, dang, you know, I should be thinking about more often. Okay, so, I think the bigger thing for me, and this is not really answering your question directly, so I apologize, but it is fine. It's of how I think about it is to say that when I think about high ticket items with cost of an intervention, okay, number one, my biggest question is when a patient's telling me like, I read about this, or, you know, this service or whatever at a local place or whatever else, right? My first question is that place or practitioner or whatever, and no judgment to that person, okay, but you know, there's a bias there, okay? I mean, they offer that, and it's an out-of-pocket service, and of course, okay. Now, I'd like to believe that those practitioners and, you know, our colleagues, whoever, like, we believe in that, okay. That's why we're doing it. We're not doing it just to like sell a service or to generate income or whatever, okay. But you know, those lines, like, truth of the matter is, we're humans. Like, I'll just speak for myself. Can I be clear and integral with myself that I am 100%. You know, clear that this is a fantastic thing and that it is not self-serving. And that is just a hard thing to really be honest with myself about. I just don't know, right? Especially when it's like both. It can be both. So, you know, putting that on the other side, you know, where it's not me offering that thing, I'm just saying, look, number one, you're getting a great, like, you know, suggestion that's going to be great, helpful to you, but you got to recognize that there's likely, at least statistically, there's going to be likely a bias there. Secondly, like, look, I got an account with a stem cell vendor and was able to get stem cells for people. I've done that. Okay. But like, when the same patient tells me, like, I just paid 10 grand for one injection of stem cells up in, you know, 30 minutes north of us, this was a few years ago. It's like, I hate to say, like, I could get that for you for like 2K or less. Are you kidding me? Like, that is so unjust. Like, that kind of thing just like really, it's not that I have judgment toward the practitioner. It's just so unfair to the patient to me.
Exactly.
Right. And again, like, I know that justice is like you cannot meet the subjective definition of justice to everybody. It's a setup for failure. Okay. So I'm not trying to say that. But it's just for me, again, back to your question, like, I just have more concern about the fact that if a patient is like, we're like desperate to get better, right? And if it means, and there's like an easy inherent thing in America of like, if it costs more, it must be worth it, right? There's a reason it costs more. It must be worth it. And that's just not the case. So it's just a dilemma for me to try to, like, how do I assess whether that thing really is worth it or not? Because I'm too analytical to go like, well, what's the data? And if there isn't data, then how do I make a decision now? Right. Which is another reason why I just, you know, really leaned on energetic testing so much. And again, not that it's the magic thing either, but I don't have clear topics. Like, I'm excited actually to offer the ozone. We're going to do that, right, with this other office. We're going to do that. I'm actually really excited about it because I know a lot of people do benefit from it, but I'm also aware, like, it's not the end all be all. Mm-hmm. You know, HBOT, like, I know those guys at the FLC, like, colonics all the time in their practice as a naturopath. And, yeah, I can't say that I've, like, you know, recommend that those other modalities often enough to have a fair shake internally to say, have a good sense of how effective those things are or are not. And ultimately, I'll go back to the three-part framework. For me, it's that a lot of these topics, whether it's ozone, colon hydrotherapy, castor oil packs, or whatever, like, if you look at that framework, right, a lot of those topics are about addressing the self. Okay, it's whether it's drainage of the self or trying to remove toxins that are being produced from the self. It's like you're trying to improve the nutritional deficiencies. You're trying to support the hormones, whatever it is, they're the self. But if you haven't, the concept to me is if we haven't addressed the bugs and toxins there, then it's just a constant, you're constantly trying to dump the water out of the leaky boat, right? So they might be effective, but how effective is it ultimately if the person is constant, you're not addressing the actual instigating causes of the inflammation?
Yeah.
So
that's a good call. Yeah. My thing on that is, you know, similar to yours, but the way that I've, you know, just even developed my own philosophy about it is I don't like, and chiropractic does this for sure. I don't like selling people. It's easy for people that are in pain to be sold on something that might not get them the solution that they want to. And so I like explaining to people and being very open with them and saying, this is my logic and my benefit, or this is the logic, my logic. This is the benefit you might receive. Here's the risks. Here's the cost, and allow them to make their own decision. Then I don't feel like, you know, that I never feel like I led people in the wrong direction, but I just want, yeah. I want people to know what they're getting into. I never want anybody to regret purchasing something from me that maybe didn't yield the results that they had kind of hoped for. I want them to always have realistic expectations and just know, like, hey, this is a part of the puzzle. This is a layer of the onion, and we could peel those things back, and it might still be helping. But I don't like selling people on things, and that's my biggest thing, because I see people come into me. It's not to say that hyperbaric or that ozone isn't incredibly helpful. I'm very, very intrigued by both modalities. But I see a lot of people that have been sold like it's going to solve all their problems. And then when they're finished, it hasn't yet.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you totally, 100%.
I love, more than anything, Mark, I love your philosophy. You know, and I think that's a cool thing. I'm certainly 100% biased. I think that the cool thing about Selco, I think their philosophy of their company is because they were started by two chiropractors. It is a chiropractic philosophy of that it's just like, you know, thoughts, traumas, toxins cause disease, and anything that shifts your body out of ease is dis-ease. So we need to remove the interference and bring the body back into ease. But you're a very philosophical dude. I really appreciated talking to you. I'm going to let you go because I know it's later, even on the East Coast.
I got to say this one thing though. Like, you know, so several times talked about like body trauma, head injuries, and even the thoughts, context, toxins, and all that stuff. Yeah, that's another thing for another time, right? We just talked about that three-part framework, right? But if I were to show you a visual, like when I test through on the energetics, especially if I'm looking at it really comprehensively, that three-part framework, that's just what goes under the microcellular person, the microcellular physical person. But a side parallel to the microphysiologic person, which has the three parts, is the structural stuff, which is like your domain. And I would learn a ton from you and other folks, you know, who are much more aware of that stuff, like hyperlaxity, injuries, head injuries, tracheomalacia, the list goes on and on. But there's structural, like tangible tissue dysfunctions, right? Parallel to the microphysiologic person. And then you put those two under the umbrella of the physical person, and parallel to the physical person is the metaphysical person. And if you go down that road, you know, in my map and how I do the whole assessments, under the metaphysical person, now you get into mind and spirit. And the mind is like, you know, talking within ourselves, and the trapped negative thoughts, trapped negative feelings. And then the spiritual is more like, you know, external conflicts. And you're totally right. Like, you want to talk about bugs and toxins, right? I totally with you. Like, you want to talk about life traumas and other toxins that are not bugs and toxins, like life toxins, people toxins, thought toxins, whole nother ball game. Major deals, major issues for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Time.
Yeah. Thoughts, traumas, toxins. That's the original chiropractic philosophy from 125 years ago. And it still rings true today. And I would say another thing, which again, I know you're familiar with, but even, you know, for somebody that doesn't adjust anymore, who has spent, you know, a long time doing that, subluxation and just the proprioceptive nature of the, you know, the spine is just loaded full of proprioceptors telling your brain how you're living and existing in relation to gravity. And if those joints aren't mechanically moving properly, then the proprioception gets thrown off. And then that leads to downstream dis-ease of certain types. It's not as easy as like the old subluxation model of stepping on a hose and like blocking the hose, but Absolutely. Those joints get locked up and it causes physical manifestations. So super cool talking to you. Super cool kind of putting all these pieces together. I think the takeaway to me is that everything matters. Not everything matters to every person, but everything matters. And so you just go through and you look through that. I would also say too, again, I promise I'll stop talking, but even the ongoing Alzheimer's and dementia research and stuff, that's kind of what they're finding is like, hey, this exposome, this inflammaging, these stressors that accumulate throughout the years, it all matters. And that is what they're finding is the cause and the solution to modern day problems like neurodegenerative diseases. It's not there's one medication that's working or one, you know, root cause. It's all this things that accumulate throughout the years and exposome interfaces and self. So Dr. Mark Hsu, anything else you'd like to add in closing? Otherwise, thank you very much. And I appreciate you being here. Anything that you want to add as far as where people can find you? I know your website is Dr. Mark Hsu. That's S-U, drmarkhsu.com. But anything else that you want to pitch or promote or anything?
We have a lot. I think we're very, very similar in our thinking and paradigms, principles, and values and concepts. So it's awesome to, you know, it's just awesome to network with people and you know, share experiences with, you know, people with the same passion, mission, calling, heart, and all that. So keep up your great work, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate seeing your name all the time on the GPL, the Mosaic Forum, and all the other places like that. So I'm sure our paths will continue crossing in many of those things. So keep it up, and I appreciate you, and have a good rest of your night. Thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thank you.